This is On the Mark. I'm Mark Harmon. The Final Four is here, and let's take a look at the one team that most people actually thought would be in the Final Four. That, of course, is North Carolina, Roy Williams and company, back for the 20th time in the Final Four. That is a NCAA record. Zach Pearson, keeping it heel, site expert, is with me to start the podcast today. Zach, thank you for taking time. Justin Jackson, named to the AP First Team All-America squad, which I would say deservedly so, and a pretty nice bounce-back season for him, and a huge reason why the Tar Heels are where they're at.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Yeah, Jackson, you know, he really took advantage of that new NBA draft rule, testing out the waters, getting feedback on his game, and he worked hard all summer, and it's certainly shown. I mean, he's very well-deserving of all the accolades he's been racking up, the ACC Player of the Year, all the first teams, and he's definitely a big reason why Carolina's back at the Final Four.
Yeah, you go back to last summer. Are you surprised? I mean, I am, that he actually ended up back at Carolina, sort of rededicated himself to getting better. Definitely has, and has set himself up pretty nicely for his own future.
Yeah, you know, my initial thought when I saw that he was going to declare for the draft was I thought he was gone. He made the smart move by testing that new rule, you know, not hiring an agent. And then when, you know, he kind of said, oh, I'm coming back to North Carolina, you know, it kind of got, I know I got a lot of Tar Heel fans excited, but to see the improvement in his game, it's, you know, you got to be happy for the kid, because especially when he's coming out of, going into North Carolina as a McDonald's All-American, he never really developed into that player everyone thought he'd be the first 2 years, and now we're kind of seeing how good of a player he can actually be.
He's on that first team with Frank Mason of Kansas, Josh Hart of Villanova, Lonzo Ball of UCLA, and Caleb Swanigan of Purdue. So do the math on there. There's one player that's actually in the Final Four, and that would be Justin Jackson. All right, so hey, let's talk about this matchup. And it seems to me that Carolina's obviously their huge edge is inside and pounding the boards. They want to play fast. Oregon wants to play slow. Do you think they'll be able to control the tempo?
I think they will. We've seen a couple of times this year where teams have tried to play slow against Carolina, and you know the Tar Heels kind of imposed their will on them. Butler tried to slow down the game, and you saw that when UNC dominated the boards, got out to that big lead. I think Oregon's a more talented team, and probably outside of Kentucky, the best team UNC's faced in this tournament. But I do see the Tar Heels getting out running. But the one thing you got to keep an eye on is Oregon has a couple good guards in Dylan Brooks, Dylan Ennis, and Tyler Dorsey. So they do have the firepower to, you know, keep up with Carolina. So it'll be interesting to see how UNC goes about that.
A lot of people are making the Chris Jenkins Villanova shot last year as something that motivated Carolina this season. And I mean, I think that's true to a point, but I also think that, you know, Carolina would be here regardless. But that's kind of like a nice little thing and maybe some karma coming back around, which we'll get to Mr. May in a second. But how much do you think last year's ending did impact this team?
Oh, I think it impacted it a lot. I mean, I read a report that Carolina, you know, they're all in a group text message. The group name is Unfinished Business. It's kind of gone with that motto all season long. And losing, you know, Bryce Johnson, Marcus Page, you can tell it impacted players like Joel Berry and Justin Jackson, who are on the court watching that shot go in. You know, they kind of want to do it for themselves. They want to do it for the seniors. And I know it's been a talking point for them all year. They hear it almost every postgame.
You just mentioned Joel Berry, and first he had a left ankle, then a right ankle, then a left ankle, then a right ankle. Basically, he sprained his ankles multiple times. I'm sure he'll be playing on Saturday, but what sense do you get on how effective he's going to be?
You're really going to have to look when they practice Thursday and Friday if he goes out and practices. Roy Williams said he was scared to death of Berry's ankle and the situation. So that's something to keep an eye on for the next couple of days. But without Berry 100%, UNC kind of takes a little bit of a step backwards, and you saw that in this NCAA tournament. If he's close to 100% and playing well, I think they're going to win anyway, but they might run away with it. We haven't really seen Joel Berry be that player that everyone thought he'd be because of the ankle injuries. And a lot of people forget he won most valuable player of the ACC tournament in 2016 and was a huge part and then making that that run to the national championship game.
So you got a lot of confidence going on here, Zach. I mean, we've got, Oregon's beaten some impressive teams. They're whipping Kansas, who a lot of people had winning it all. Michigan was playing as well as anybody. Why do you have this much confidence in Carolina?
I just think they're too good all around and that they have matchup problems. That, they're a unique team. Not many teams can come out and dominate the paint like Carolina does. And then when you have shooters like Justin Jackson and Joel Berry, it's easy to kick it out. The Tar Heels could be in a little bit of a trouble, though, if, like we mentioned earlier, if Oregon can slow the pace and double up the bigs. We've seen Carolina struggle in the past with situations like that.
So, okay, pretty clear then. You have Carolina winning it all.
Yes, I do.
If they do get to the championship game, which do you think is a more favorable matchup?
I do think South Carolina is a more favorable matchup. I think they are better than South Carolina. They're slightly better than Gonzaga. The two best teams are Gonzaga and North Carolina right now. I think that'd be the more interesting matchup.
Fair enough. All right, let's go to Mr. May. Luke May comes basically out of nowhere. Here's a guy who gets to Carolina. He was going to walk on as a freshman. They find a scholarship for him, and he just works and works and works, and now playing bigger than he ever has in the NCAA tournament. How does this happen as a senior?
Man, that story's pretty special. I was as shocked as anyone with his production this year. Watching him last year, he rarely got into games. When he did, he sort of struggled. You could tell that the game just wasn't there for him yet. They mentioned on the broadcast, he went into Roy Williams' office in the off season and said, "I'm going to work harder than any other player on this team," and it's improved. And I think the biggest thing about May is he's worked on his jump shot. A lot of bigs, stay in the paint. They don't have that outside game that May has. But you've been watching Carolina, May comes off and he sits back in the three-point line. He just drains threes or drains long jumpers. I was as surprised as anyone to see how well he's playing.
I mean, he's averaged less than 15 minutes per game. He had never scored more than 13 points in any of his first 65 college games. And now in his last two, he's put up 33 combined. And he hit the shot that will forever be remembered around Carolina. And he's showing up at his 8 a.m. class, and he's getting a standing ovation. There's got to be a movie made here, Zach. I think you should get on it.
I'll try my best. I said it after the game. I think I tweeted it out. The three biggest shots in North Carolina basketball history are Michael Jordan, Marcus Paige, and Luke May. I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah, and let's just give him props for a second here. If I'm hitting that shot, I don't know if I'm going to Business 101 at 8 a.m. on a Monday, but Luke May is there, and this is a first-class guy, both on and off the court.
Yeah, I'm not a morning person. I wouldn't have been there either, but yeah. That was a pretty cool video to see, and he got his props. I think he was featured on SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt. They did a little feature on him, I believe, and yeah, it's just a cool story. It's one of those stories that you love to see in March.
Let's wrap it up with the coaching matchup here. You got Dana Altman for Oregon, and of course, Roy Williams. Do you put a lot of stock into who's coaching the game, or is that kind of in the background for you right now?
There's definitely some stock there. I've never been a critic of Roy. There's been times where he has not made the right calls. But going back to that Kentucky game, a lot of people were wondering why didn't he call timeout? Why didn't he call some out? Well, Roy doesn't call timeouts late in the games like that. And there'll probably be something if the game's close in the Final Four or even National Championship game. You'll see that kind of same style where he won't call a timeout or let his players play. I do think there is a big impact in coaching. If you look, Carolina was down 64-59 against Kentucky, 5 minutes left. They moved to that zone. Roy switched into the zone. They went on a 12-0 run.
Yep.
The defense was amped up. I mean, there's a lot there with the coaching. And that's not to take away from Altman either. I mean, he's a hell of a coach.
Right. Final score, you want to give a prediction?
I usually don't do predictions, but I'll give you one. I'm going to say, let's go North Carolina 75 to Oregon 69.
Okay, fair enough. It's in the books now, Zach. Way to step out. 75-69 Carolina. Hey, we appreciate the time and great job with the coverage of keeping it heel.
Thank you. I appreciate it, man.
So there's a look at the North Carolina Tar Heels, and a lot of confidence there, but you got to figure that Carolina is feeling a whole lot of that bravado as they enter into the Final Four, the team with the most experience and maybe the most talent. But let's go out to Oregon. AutZenZoo.com, Justin Phillips, site expert for the Oregon Ducks, doing it all and probably did not expect to be here in the Final Four and talking on this On the Mark podcast today. Is that fair, Justin? Did you have the Ducks in your bracket pool? I'm guessing you did not, but maybe you did.
I did not, but I mean, it all depends on matchups and how you play and momentum, and you know, both teams going into this one with 4-game winning streaks, and you know, it's you know, once you get to the tournament, numbers are basically thrown out the window, and it's whoever's playing best at the time. So,
and that is true. But to dominate Kansas, I mean, there was moments in the second half, I guess, last weekend where it was like the Ducks were just waiting or giving Kansas a chance to get back in the game and KU could just not hit a shot. But other than that, I thought whenever you needed a bucket, I mean, the Ducks just earned their way and they did it against Michigan too. I mean, I think this team belongs big time.
Yeah, Jordan Bell, I mean, obviously they lost Chris Boucher coming out of the Pac-12 tournament.
Yep.
And, you know, we'll talk about that here in a minute. He's going to be really missed, I think, in this game against North Carolina coming up this weekend. But when you look at the talent, what Jordan Bell has done in this tournament so far, I've seen stats where he's being compared to, like, Hakeem Olajuwon when he played in the tournament. He's, you know, he's getting offensive, he's getting rebounds, he's making shots. He's got a meme site out there.
Well, he's screaming at Dana Altman too. I mean, this is a guy that's their relationship is interesting.
Yeah. But I mean, you've got offense, you know, all around with Oregon. I mean, you've got the freshman sensation in Peyton Pritchard, who is just getting going. You know, as a young man on the floor and, you know, getting some really good assists out there. You've got Tyler Dorsey, who's just been on fire, 8 straight games of 20-plus points. And then, of course, you've got Dylan Brooks, but I don't think we really need to talk about him, do we?
Not necessarily, no. Well, here, let's go back to Chris Boucher, because against Carolina, the size that they're bringing, you know, Meeks is grabbing basically everything that's coming off the glass. Can Oregon, in your mind, with the size disadvantage, hang in there? And how do they combat what's going to be going on?
Well, I mean, every team in the Pac-12 that Oregon has played has basically been outside. So obviously going into this one, you know, Altman going into his first Final Four, you know, Roy Williams having all of the experience, you know, in his basket, I think it's going to be a bigger challenge for Oregon. But, you know, if Bell keeps playing the way that he is, if Cavell Bigby-Williams, one of the other Ducks big men, can have a really good game, I think the Ducks might actually have a chance, at least to keep it competitive. If not, you know, as we said before, you know, turn around, they could win the game.
Okay. Now, pace is being put. I mean, Carolina wants to play fast. Oregon wants to play slow. In the tournament, the Ducks have been able to control tempo pretty much in every single game. How, in your mind, have they been able to do that?
Just experience throughout the year. You know, experience with, you know, the players that they have on the floor, you know, at the time. I mean, keep in mind, Oregon does a lot during the regular season off of their bench, too. So, I mean, not only do you have Peyton Pritchard, you know, in the starting lineup, but you've got a very capable sixth man in Casey Benson this year too, who can basically run the show as well.
Okay, that's fair. Tell me about 1939, first time in the Final Four since then, and how the Ducks community is just kind of celebrating this. And I mean, is it, hey, whatever happens from here, pure gravy, or are people thinking, hey, let's go win this thing?
Well, I mean, I think people are thinking, you know, hey, they can go win this thing. You know, I mean, this is a point where, you know, like we said, they haven't been there since 1939. And, you know, back then, obviously a different story than it is now, with that being the first tournament and this, you know, and we're being where we're at this point. But, you know, I think the community has embraced this team. They've certainly come out and, you know, and had a lot of sellouts at the arena this year. and when you have two straight years in a row of, you know, of undefeated seasons at home, I think that says a lot about, you know, the program and what, you know, what Coach Dana Altman has done in the 7 years that he's been here in Eugene.
Right, and you're talking about five straight trips to the tournament, back-to-back Elite Eight.
Oh, yes.
I mean, this is an unbelievable job by Dana Altman. What has he done so well in your mind outside of just getting good players?
Just consistency. I mean, he gets guys that can play, that are competitive, that are hungry, that give 100% and don't give up. You know, even when they're down, they try to find a way to, from way down deep to try to get back and be competitive. And I think that might be the overall edge that this team has in the tournament this year is, you know, they're as competitive as they come.
You know, you go back through the tournament here, Justin, and you think about the Rhode Island game, and Oregon's turning the ball over a ton, and you're barely getting by an 11 seed. Now, granted, that was a pretty good 11 seed, and I actually had Rhode Island in my Sweet 16, but this is a team that has had some adversity and fought through it throughout games, and I mean they're going to have that against Carolina. It's obviously not going to be smooth sailing. So I mean this is a battle tested squad. I think that's one thing you have to like about the Ducks.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if, you know, foul trouble is going to be a key in this game, you know, depending on what side of the ball it is. You know, if Brooks ends up in foul trouble early, you know, that you know, could mean trouble for Oregon. But, you know, obviously, you know, we're trying to get it to go the other way, right?
If you're a Ducks fan, yes, most definitely. Hopefully this podcast is being listened to by both Carolina and Oregon and neutral people, and they're all about to make a bet based on what you're going to say here, Justin. Tell me why Oregon.
Uh-oh.
Tell me why Oregon wins this game if they do. Is outside of just shooting shooting the lights out, which they certainly did, especially in the first half against Kansas.
Well, I mean, North Carolina is a different animal, I think, than anybody else they've seen this season. You know, they're a one seed in, you know, for a reason. You know, they've got, you know, a couple of guys that they can guard the 3-point line. They've got, you know, Jackson averaging 18 a game. You know, Meeks pulling down roughly 10 rebounds a game. But I mean, for Oregon, you've got guys with experience. You've got guys that can get it done. You know, obviously, you know, Dylan's going to be the focus, but if you can get it to, you know, to Tyler Dorsey, and, you know, he can hit that outside shot, which he's done in the tournament, you know, a couple of times from, you know, the top of the key in a couple of key situations. You know, I think Oregon has a real chance in this one.
Prediction? You want to go with one?
Prediction. I think it's going to be close. Don't know if it's going to come down to a final shot. Obviously, North Carolina puts about 80 points up a game, Oregon about 75. I'm going to go with 76-67 Oregon.
Okay. You're not doing that just to please your readers, are you?
No.
Good for you. Justin, appreciate the time. Great coverage, and we enjoy it at AutZenZoo.com for all your Oregon Ducks. Not just the hoops, but anything going on with Oregon athletics. You can get it all there. AutZenZoo.com. Justin, appreciate it.
No problem. My pleasure.